We got the Wiggles coming up an hour from now, and that's from their new album. This one called Cubano Salsa. Kind of ties in a little bit with our next guest. It is Meg Medina. She's an award-winning Cuban-American author who writes picture books and middle grade and young adult fiction. Meg, thanks for joining us this morning. Good morning. How are you?
Thanks so much. I'm going to have to tune into the Wiggles.
Yeah. And it's interesting, a lot of, not only with, you know, different cultures, even with the youth now, there's different music cultures that you expose kids to all sorts of types of genres of music. You kind of give them an international flavor at an early age, don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then you read that way too, of course. My own books are focused on Latino characters. And when I'm reading widely. I like to read all kinds of people, people that look familiar to me, people that seem unfamiliar to me, too. It's kind of exciting. You get to know them that way.
Your book, Mercy Suarez Changes Gears.
Yeah.
She says here she knew the sixth grade would be different, but she had no idea how different. Oh, that's a tagline for you right there.
Well, most of us remember the craziness of being 11 and 12, right? It's a joyous time because it's silly, it's still young, it's still innocent, it's fun, and it's also chaotic, right? Everything changes, your body, your friends, who you're friendly with, what your thoughts are about people you like or don't like, the struggles you start to have with your parents. So that's what Mercy's about. She lives with her family in South Florida in sort of an extended family. Her grandparents, Abuela and Lolo, live in one house next door. She lives with her brother, Roli, and her parents, and on the third house, her aunt, Tia Inez, and two psycho five-year-old twins. And so everybody's sort of in her business and raising her in this sort of extended, lovely family as she goes to this school where she and Roli are scholarship students. So it's sort of a look at that, right? What her experience is in that very particular setting. And, you know, how she faces changes and friends. But it's also a look at changes that happen in our families, right? Because kids don't only operate in school and with friends. They operate on the backdrop of their families. And her grandfather's very ill, something that they've kept from her until now because they can't keep it a secret any longer. So it's a sweet and sour book. It's really funny in parts. I mean, somebody loses their eyebrows in this book. And it's also a kind of sad or a more soulful look at what kids have to live through sometimes in their family and what they have to see and how we make a way forward. So it's sort of, for me, when I write these books that include difficult subjects, I try to think of them sort of as a roadmap for kids, a place where they could find comfort and sort of practice safely in the pages for when hard things happen to them.
When you're writing a book like that, or even who is this book written for? I don't know if kids read books, the protagonists, their own age or a little older? Where do they like to read those type of things?
Typically, the adage is that they read like a year or two older. So this is a book for age, it's a middle grade novel. So that's usually kids from about 9 to 12. So usually kids, you know, in the fourth, fifth, sixth grade are reading this book. I mean, plenty of adults read middle grade and YA fiction, as we know, especially YA fiction. There's a huge readership among adults. So it's all sort of, nothing's hard and fast in those things. But when I was writing it, I was thinking for that population specifically.
When you look at this book and you take a look at the different characters, does wealth or lack of wealth come into play at all?
Absolutely. So, economic differences are they're just a fact of life. And so we often have kids who get these opportunities to be to experience schools, whether through scholarship assistance or grants or whatever. It's a hard thing to find yourself as somebody who is consistently the one without or trying to keep up. And so many things that people with more means take for granted, a new car, a house, a vacation, things that are taken for granted aren't the way that many people live. And so that becomes kind of tricky. How do we negotiate those things? How do we create spaces where, you know, we still make friendships and relationships and, you know, across all kinds of boundaries, not just cultural, not just racial, but also economic. That was certainly my experience growing up. My mother arrived from Cuba in the 60s, and although she was a teacher in her country, here she was a factory worker. So that was a minimum wage job. And that, you know, that puts pressure on the family. Trying to raise people on a minimum wage job is tough work. And she did it, but there were plenty of things that I would have wanted, or most kids wanted, that were not possible. And so I include those ideas and those thoughts for Mercy, too.
Well, no matter the economic status, people can always go to the library, get a book.
Absolutely.
Get some books. Let's talk a little bit about, you're here this morning a little bit also to kind of give us ideas for summer reading, or what books you've seen out there that maybe other authors have put together that you think would really add to the child's reading and life and experience.
Absolutely. So this year, Mercy, because Mercy won the Newbery, I wanted to spend the year really promoting reading and promoting authors from all kinds of backgrounds. So I have a list on my website, and I'll give you the call letters later, that for different ages that sort of look at all corners of culture and so on. So one of my favorites is A Big Moon Cake for Little Star, which is by Grace Lynn, who's beloved in children's literature. It's a picture book that won the Caldecott Medal this honor this year. And so a moon cake is a traditional Chinese dessert. But in this story, Little Star is a girl who lives in the sky, and her mother bakes her a moon cake and hangs it in the sky with one direction, which is, do not eat the moon cake. So what does Little Star do? We get hungry at night. She takes a nibble, and slowly the moon cake starts to get smaller and smaller until it disappears, and the only thing we can do now is make another moon cake and hang it in the sky. This is a beautiful book that sort of introduces kids gently to other cultures and other foods, also introduces them to the basic scientific idea that when you look in the sky, the moon gets smaller over time, and then it gets bigger again. I love it. The illustrations are gorgeous, and it's just clever and sweet. Another one that I love is My Papi Has a Motorcycle by Isabel Quintero, and this is her picture book debut. This is like the ultimate cool dad picture book. Imagine if your father came home every day from his job at a construction site and said, hey, let's take a ride on my bike. And so he puts her on the back of a motorcycle, and they go zipping through town. They live in a border town in California, so they see the taqueria, they see the place where they buy paletas and popsicles, they see the businesses that are going out of business. They see her grandparents. It's like a ride through a community that's changing. But mostly, the illustrations are just so cool. They're by Zeke Pena. And I think kids will just love the book on all the different levels that you could read it. The parents, I think, will love the story of a community changing, and the kids will just love the vroom and riding with the motorcycle. As kids get older and they start to read by themselves, there's a series I really love called A Boy Called Bat. This is a chapter book, so those first books where your kids are reading on their own. Bat's mom is a veterinarian, and they find a baby skunk that's without its mother, and Bat decides that he can raise it himself with the help of a world-renowned skunk expert that he becomes a pen pal with. So, you know, a puppy and a kitten is one thing, but a skunk presents other problems. But he sticks to it. Why do I love this book? It's a series. It's got three books in the series, but mostly it's because Bat is a boy on the autism spectrum. So you get to see and experience life through his eyes, all the things that he can do well, all the things that serve him and about him that serve him well as he's taking care of this skunk kit. It's just, it's gentle, it's sweet. I think kids will love it. And it, you know, it's often funny.
Do many times the authors that put these books together have, I don't want to say personal experiences, but it's their life that they bring to it? You know, their culture is what they want to express and share those?
I think so. I think so. Certainly, you know, I think all of us write from things we know. But Alana K. Arnold, who wrote a book, A Boy Called Bat, certainly has experience with autism. Grace Lynn, as well, is writing from her culture. So I think that there's an authenticity that is important, that we're really getting the stories from people who know.
Where can people find out more about this list or your books, as well as just getting ideas for other books to share?
Oh, sure. Come to my website. It's www.megmedina.com, and I have books there for picture book all the way to high school readers.
Sounds very good. Well, Meg, we appreciate your time sharing this morning. You've really sold me on a couple of those books.
Okay, good.
All right.
Happy reading.
Thank you very much, Meg. Have a good
okay.
day.
Bye-bye. Bye.
It is 7:51 at AM 930 WEOL. Meg Medina, she's the author of Mercy Suarez Changes Gears, also written some other ones. And Craig, there was the other one that I saw on here, Burn Baby Burn. It has like a disco ball on the cover there. Well, I should probably look into that. And a lot of picture books, too, which I don't mind picture books as well. But it's always interesting to see the stories